Start your evening off right.
This is U.S. Senator John Ossoff.
Hey, Atlanta, this is Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones.
The new Shelley Winter Show here on WSB Radio, weeknights from 7 to 10 p.m.
Keep up good work, Shelley.
The Shelley Winter Show.
Hey, everybody, it's the Shelley Winter Show. We're live, we're local, we're topical, we're relevant. I got to tell you, I've got to talk about my weekend, going to tell you all about it. We've got a bunch of stories to talk about. I want to start off with Russell Brand, but before Russell Brand in the news, before I get to that, I got to tell you, so one of the great things, this is a great lineup at this station. Chris Chandler with the Atlanta's Morning News, and then you go into my little brother Mark Arum, and then Eric Erickson, then Sean Hannity, and then 4 to 7, as you know, Eric Von Hessler and the Von Hessler Doctrine is right before me. So you listen to them, and then you listen to me. And one of the great things about going after Eric Von Hessler is that as he's leaving the studio, he and I get to talking, right? Because I'm setting up for my show and he's kind of breaking down from his show, and it's very seamless. No one's in anyone's way or anything like that, but we're always talking about what's going on, right? A conversation just hits. Not like I come in, he says, okay, good night, and walks out, or I say, okay, great show, and nothing like that. Like, we talk. And so what happens is sometimes the conversation's so good that I'm still setting up and we're talking, and then my show starts, and I'm a couple seconds behind because he and I got to talking, and it's such a great conversation. I got to tell you, Friday, thank you to everyone that came out for the live lounge on Friday. Eric Von Hessler stopped by, and I'm going to talk to him and Jared and see if there's something we can do for our listeners with all of us together. I think it'd be a great idea. We're like a round table of sorts. I don't know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. But let's get started with the show. Happy Monday to everyone. I'm going to talk about the bath I took with my gambling. I think I'm going to stop gambling. Well, as I said, that I put in a parlay for the Monday night games tonight. But I'm going to talk about that. Also, male loneliness epidemic and how it affects fathers. We're going to talk about that. This missing jet, they found it. Does anybody see that as just the strangest story ever? A missing jet. I don't know. We'll get to that. But I want to start here. Trump lawyer Jenna Ellis calls him a name. Matt Gaetz is going to be running for Florida government. I want to talk about that and much, much more. Right, but let's get started let's get started right now. Russell Brand. So over the weekend, for those of you who don't know, Russell Brand was a big time TV guy in England. Did a couple movies, and by all accounts, a very successful actor. Very successful guy in Europe. Came over here, and a good guy. Well, not a good guy. I'm not going to say that now with this news, but a successful guy. People knew him. Women loved him. Married Katy Perry for like 12 months. I mean, it's Katy Perry, right? Do you need to be married to Katy Perry more than a year? I don't think so. I think you get everything out of it in a year. It's Katy Perry. But anyway, I digress. But so the guy starts a podcast generating millions and millions of views. And he's talking about the things that a lot of people aren't talking about. Talked about COVID. He talked about the vaccine. Things that we talked about right here. Don't get millions and millions of followers, but we talked about them nonetheless. So he also talks about Ukraine, very critical of the funding of Ukraine, which a lot of people are starting to be very critical about the funding for Ukraine. The more you give them some money, you give them some arms, and then a year and a half later, you're still giving them money, you're still giving them arms, and the American people and the people around the world, a lot of people say, you know what, I'm kind of like, A lot of people fighting other people right now that can use our help. Why these guys? Well, it's against Russia. We need them to fight. Okay, well, it kind of seems like a sludge fund to me. This is what a lot of people are saying to themselves. It's Ukraine. You've already told me it's a corrupt country. I've seen the things that go on there. They're like the trap house of Eastern Europe, Ukraine is. And so people are getting legitimately like, I'm not sure if we should continue giving them money. So he talks about those kinds of things. He talks about the nanification of men in this country. He talks about feminism. He talks about everything. I wouldn't necessarily call Russell Brand a conservative by any stretch of the imagination. I would not call him a conservative. I would call Russell Brand a guy that shares his opinions. Now, here's what's very interesting. He's been accused of rape, sexual assault, and emotional abuse. That's what he's been accused of. And the allegations are between 2006 and 2013. Now, you would think at this point in time, I would say to you, the police in Europe, right, have been investigating this, and now they're coming and they may charge Mr. Brand. No. I'm telling you, know who did the investigation? The Sunday Times, The Times, and Channel 4 dispatches. These are all European, English specifically, media outlets. Media outlets did an investigation into Russell Brand. And they came up with rape, sexual assault, and emotional abuse. Now, this guy, by the way, was a sexy guy. Like, you know, Hugh Jackman and Clive Owen, all these guys.
Like,
you know,
a sex symbol?
Sex symbol. Thank you. Thank you very much, Blue. That's the word I was looking for, symbol. Thank you. But he was like that. He's a sex symbol. And the brand that they sold, no pun intended, was one of this guy that liked the women and had the women and everything like that. But the media were the ones who investigated him. And it got me thinking, wow, I wonder why Russell Brand's being investigated. Could it be the things that he's talking about? Could it be the traction that he's getting? Millions and millions of people following him and listening to him. More than these outlets probably have combined. And the things that he's talking about. He's dissenting from the narrative. And it's the only thing I could come up with as to why this would drop now. You know why? Because many people would say to me, well, Shelley, you know, it's sexual abuse, sexual assault, rape, and emotional abuse. You know, there's no real time frame on when you expose that kind of stuff. No, you're absolutely right. But in these investigations, what they found was that in England and in the media in England protected the guy. Apparently, this was well known by insiders, but they protected him because he was so popular. He was doing so well, good a job for them, and that they basically protected him. So my question becomes, why isn't he worthy of protection now? See, if you protect a guy from charges of rape, alleged sexual assault, alleged emotional abuse, and you protect him from that because he's helping you and he's making so much money for you, and now he's gone, why do you care that they go after him now? You don't. You shouldn't. However, if he's beating your pants off, if he's taking your listeners, if more importantly than the business reason, if he's telling people, millions and millions of people, that which you won't tell them because you've been bought and sold by intelligence agencies and governments all across the world, you won't say it, so he does, now he's not protected anymore. And that's what makes this story so fascinating to me. Because it's a story that says, hey, we will allow you to say whatever you want to say. As long as what you're saying is what we agree with and what we've all agreed to be the official story cleared for everyone to hear. Other than that, I've got 7 years. I got 7 years, 17 years ago and 14 years ago, respectively, for you to 10 years ago. Sorry, 17 and 10. I've got that amount of time. I've got this packaged. I've got this waiting. I've got this on ice until the about appropriate time to bring it out, because we can't have you continuously telling people you giving money to Ukraine is bad. COVID was made up. Masking was useless. Shutting down was ridiculous. And we certainly in this country can't have you telling millions of people that Trump just ain't that bad. So Shelley Winter Show. We'll be right back. 404-97... Oh, I almost gave my number again. 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. It's the Shelley Winter Show, ladies and gentlemen. We're live, we're local, we're topical, we're relevant, we're passionate. We're all those things. We hope that you'd listen every Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. on this great station, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk. So I started with Russell Brand, accused of rape, sexual assault, and emotional abuse. Investigation done by media outlets, not by the police, not by law enforcement, but by media outlets. Media outlets that probably, by and large, he is outreaching and out-influencing them and possibly making more money than they are as an individual, right? And let's be clear. I'm not defending an accused rapist, sexualist. I'm not defending rape, sexual assault, or emotional abuse. I'm just asking the question, which is what we are all supposed to do, ask the question. If this went on from 2006 to 2013 and he was reportedly defended by the media, then what makes him not able to be defended now? Is it his views? Is he speaking out of turn? And I think that's a fair question to ask. He said that himself, and people say, yeah, that's what you do. Well, what do you mean that's what you do? I'm not sure what that means. That's what you do when you get accused of rape, sexual assault, and emotional abuse? This guy was a sex symbol. I've never been a sex symbol. I'd like to be. No, I've never been a sex symbol, but I'd like to be. I like to be that guy that's so drop-dead gorgeous that women are just, you know, all over me. That's never been me.
You want to be the new you.
Right. Thank you, Blue. But at the same time, I think that I think normal people can understand that, If you're a sex addict, as he said he was, if you are very promiscuous, as he said he was, if you're a sex symbol, as he was, then I can imagine there's a bunch of stories out there that people could tell. I can only imagine. If you're the type of person, I've never been this person, where you're walking down the street and women are just throwing themselves at you, and please don't become feminist on me all of a sudden and tell me women don't throw themselves at people that are rich and famous and have a lot of money. And, oh, by the way, happen to be kind of drop-dead gorgeous at the same time. Oh, no, women don't do that. But I would think that that person probably can be accused of a lot of things a lot of times. Again, I'm not defending rape, sexual assault, and emotional abuse. I'm just living in a world that I'm living in right now. A lady in a hotel with cameras all around the place accused Michael Irving of saying inappropriate things to her and trying to get her up to his hotel room, right? That's what that woman never said. Michael Irving grabbed her, assaulted her, raped her, or anything. She said he said inappropriate things to her and touched her arm. And that night, NFL Network dropped him from the Super Bowl coverage. That night, he just settled a $100 million lawsuit. The lady lied about the entire episode. And I can go on and on. Football players that went to jail for being accused of rape. I can go on and on. Players who've had their entire careers derailed from accusations of rape and assault, and nothing ever happens. It comes out to be not true, it comes out to be made up, and nothing ever happens. So what is the penalty for women and or men to accuse people of doing something they didn't do if nothing ever happens? But I want to bring this up to tell you another story. Tim Ballard. You guys know who Tim Ballard is? Tim Ballard is the guy who Sound of Freedom is patterned off of this guy, loosely patterned off of this guy, or directly patterned off of this guy. He's the guy that started the whole Operation Underground Railroad. This is what he's accused of. This one of the things he's accused of. He would coerce women. No, he would ask women to act as his wife on undercover overseas missions. quote, ostensibly aimed at rescuing victims of sex trafficking. So this, how is it ostensibly aimed at rescuing victims of sex trafficking if that's what he did? But then he would then allegedly coerce those women into sharing a bed and showering together, claiming that it was necessary to fool the traffickers. Ballard is said to have sent at least one woman a photo of himself in his underwear festooned with fake tattoos, and to have asked another, quote, how far she was willing to go, in the words of a source, to save children. Now, I don't know about you. I have never done this myself. But I have female friends, many of them, who tell me this happens to them all the time. Men send them pictures of themselves in underwear, of themselves naked, of themselves laying in bed in some sexy pose, butt naked, to these women, unsolicited, all the time. How far are you willing to go, in the words of a source, to save children? To me, I could be wrong. That is called a line. That's a line that not very good with women men would use. Hey, baby, what's your name? Oh, my name is Sally. Hey, you know, how far are you willing to go with the talk radio host? Oh, my God! Put you in jail, Mr. Winter. I can't believe you said that to me. Look, I'm not downplaying real assault. I'm not downplaying rape. It happens. It's sad, and it shouldn't. And men that do these kinds of things should be put under a jail. And if they're not put under a jail, they should put in a jail cell with a guy named Bubba who hates rapists and molesters and assaulters. That's my feeling on those things. But I know setups when I'm seeing them. I saw it with Herman Cain, rest in peace. I've seen it time and time again. I know a setup when I'm seeing it. Tim Ballard, Russell Brand, smells, looks, sounds like setups. Oh, by the way, before I go to break, let me tell you, Tim Ballard is preparing to run for the U.S. Senate as a Republican. There you have it. Shelley Winter Show. We'll be right back. Coming up in 2 minutes on the Shelley Winter Show, Josh Crawford from the Georgia Center for Opportunity. He's the director of criminal justice initiatives at the center. He's on the phone with us now. We're going to be talking about crime in the city of Atlanta. It's the Shelley Winter Show. That's in 2 minutes. Woo! Let's go. Young Blue is on—he's on a Wheels of Steel tonight. Rob Calloway is taking your calls at 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. The interesting thing, good song, Blue. I was going to say something, but it didn't seem to be true. What song was that? I thought
that's Know How.
Okay, that's a sample of Curtis Mayfield's.
Let me check it out.
Yeah, and so I thought that's what was coming in, and I was going to say, oh, it's interesting, we're talking about crime and a song from a movie about a pimp, but it was a sample, so I had to pull back that commentary there. But on the phone with me right now is Josh Crawford. Josh Crawford is an attorney, a criminologist, and a director at the Georgia Center for Opportunity. Welcome to the Shelley Winter Show, Josh. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Right, so just a little background, ladies and gentlemen. Josh was supposed to be on, I think, last week. And so we kept having to move it. So I'm glad he's finally on because I've been wanting to have this conversation. So you studied crime specifically in Atlanta, all across the country.
All across the country, but the most recent study is on Atlanta specifically.
And so crime is rising, but the politicians will tell us that crime is not up, murders down in Atlanta. And it's very interesting when they say these things to me, they'll say something like, we had 200 murders last year and we only have 170 now. And I'm thinking to myself, that's still a large number. You know what I mean?
Right. No, absolutely. And things fluctuate year to year. And so what tends to matter more is trends. And so since 2018, we've lost 217 more Atlanta residents than we would have if we just maintained the 10-year average for homicides for 2008 through 2017.
So 200 more people died because it went up as a trend.
Correct.
So when you study these things, what do you find? Let's start here, and this may be controversial, but what do you find as to who the victims are and who the perpetrators are?
Yeah, so crime victimization in this country, especially violent crime victimization, homicide victimization more specifically, is one of the most racially disparate experiences in the United States. The majority of victims in the city of Atlanta and large percentages of victims all over the country are African American, despite being relatively small percentages of the population. And we actually saw that those numbers increased in terms of percentage basically since 2020. We have seen the average homicide victim become more likely to be African American since 2020.
And that is very important because I find it interesting that the people who are elected officials in many of these cities tend to kind of look like the victims. Yet it doesn't seem like there's any concerted effort on protecting those victims.
That's why I think you're beginning to see some pushback. The NAACP chapter in Oakland, California, several weeks ago sort of made national news for putting out a press release with a number of black pastors in Oakland basically demanding that the city refund the police and prosecute violent criminals because it was people who looked like them. It was the people that they represented who are the victims when crime increases and when neighborhoods become less safe. And so you are starting to see some pushback from these sort of legacy center-left organizations, but in far too many cities across the country, those who sort of give lip service to caring about these communities are often the last to try to do something about rampant violence in a neighborhood.
And it's crazy to me. We're on the phone with Josh Crawford. He is a director at the Georgia Center for Opportunity. He did a study on crime, most recent one on City of Atlanta crime. And we're having that discussion in Baltimore, Maryland. And we're getting ready to go to a break. So I want you to answer this question on the other side. Not Baltimore, Washington, D.C. I've heard political officials, elected officials advocating curfews, which I'm not against, but also bringing in National Guard troops. Can we talk about that? Because that seems to be something that would be very radical, but seems to be kind of taking a very broad hammer to a problem that's very specific. Can we talk about that on the other side of this break?
Absolutely.
We're on the phone with Josh Crawford. He is a director at the Georgia Center for Opportunity. He did a study on crime around the country, but also more specifically Atlanta. And that's what we're talking about. 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK if you have a question. The Shelley Winter Show, ladies and gentlemen. We're on the phone with Josh Crawford, a director at the Georgia Center for Opportunity. He did a study on crime, particularly in Atlanta, city of Atlanta. And so I wanted to ask you, before we went to break, I asked you, in Washington, D.C., elected officials are calling for a curfew. I'm for that. I can see that. But they're also calling possibly about putting the National Guard on the ground in Washington, D.C. Your thoughts?
That having more people on the street, more officers on the street in particular, reduces crime. And so we see that in the Atlanta study. We see that per capita officers on the street started to decline in 2016, and it was shortly thereafter that the homicides went up. We see this in national studies, that essentially more cops means less crime. What I find so ironic about the Washington, D.C. situation is that the Washington, D.C. City Council has not once but twice voted to substantially cut the budget of the Washington, D.C. Police Department. And so now there's this thought of turning to the National Guard. And here's the thing. National Guardsmen perform admirable duties, but are not trained to sort of serve the role as beat cop or serve the role that law enforcement serves. And so what is frankly a far better solution for Washington, D.C. is to adequately fund their police department and then institute some best practices around how to combat violent street gangs, how to combat the kinds of rising crime that they're experiencing, because Washington, D.C. has really sort of set itself apart as a pillar of cities doing a lot of the wrong things. And so D.C.'s got a lot of work to do, and it really shouldn't start with the National Guard. It should start with adequately funding law enforcement and adopting some best practices in their police department.
We're on the phone with Josh Crawford of the Georgia Center for Opportunity. Is that true of all cities? Like should Atlanta hire more police officers? As you may or you probably do know, we're having this fight here about the cop city, I hate to use that term, the police and fire training center here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Isn't that an answer to rising crime?
Absolutely. And Atlanta has seen declines in officer numbers overall and officer numbers per capita basically since 2018. And so the Atlanta Police Department would benefit from a robust recruitment program to get new officers into the department. But there are a couple of specific ways that the department can do some additional things to combat crime, making sure that homicide detectives in particular have workable caseloads. As homicides increase, very rarely do the staff of homicide units increase. And so what that means is that detectives end up working more cases a year, and you can't work as many cases efficiently right. as you could with fewer cases. And so investing some resources there, and then just investing in best practice. There is this strategy that's called focused deterrence. And essentially what it does is it hyper-focuses on the people driving your violence. In any given city, it's typically about 0.5% of your population that is street gang affiliated and is responsible for between 50 and 70% of your shootings. Well, 0.5% of the city's population is far more easy to police than an entire city is. And when you're talking about your drivers of violence, that's who you're talking about.
But what happens is, as you said before, the victims are largely African-American in many of these cities. The perpetrators are largely African-American in many of these cities, as your study shows, as all the numbers show. So when you try and crack down on that, you know, that small percentage of people, you're told by a group of people that you're being racist. How do you combat that?
Well, that may be true in a city like Atlanta, and there are some cities around the country where that is true. But the thing that I always counter with is that the largest gang bust in Georgia state history was in Augusta, Richmond, of a group called the Ghostface Gangsters, which was an arrest of 77 white boys who were you know, what we would think of as a non-ideological white gang. So it's not a neo-Nazi gang.
Right.
It sort of looks and acts like a gang that you would think of in a movie, but it's all white boys. And so when you focus on the actual drivers of violence, in some cases, those are going to be African-Americans, but more so than any particular race, they're going to be gang members. And so that's white gang members, that's black gang members, that's Latino gang members.
Well said, sir. Well said. So basically, the argument for us should be not around race and color. It should be around who these people actually are and their gangbangers.
Correct, because the people whose lives they're making the most difficult tend to be individuals from socially isolated, historically marginalized, high poverty neighborhoods. Who are predominantly African-American in the city of Atlanta. And so those are the people whose lives are being made more difficult by this. Those are the people that you help when you pluck out the small number of individuals that are driving the violence.
We're on the phone with Josh Crawford. Josh, I'm going to hold you over just for a couple more minutes. I want you to be able to tell people how they can get in touch with you and, more importantly, how they can find the study. Hold on, please, sir.
Can do.
It's the Shelley Winter Show. We'll be right back. This is Shelley Winter Show, live, local, topical, relevant. We're on the phone with Josh Crawford of the Georgia Center for Opportunity, and we're talking about his study on crime, particularly in Atlanta. You mentioned, before we let you go, I want you to give out how people could find the study. But before you do that, you talked about some of the causes as to crime and poverty and things like that. Are there any others that are more, let's say, family-oriented? And I'm not trying to drive for an answer. I'm just asking, does family play a role, or lack thereof play a role in high crime?
No, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of attention on so-called root causes, right? And some of those things are stronger predictors of criminal offending than are others. But basically, growing up in a single-parent home or a broken home somehow tends to be a pretty strong predictor, especially if there are certain other factors at play. If you were truant from school, for example, or you started to sort of do some petty offenses as a juvenile, or certainly if you were seriously offending as a juvenile. But the breakdown of the family and sort of the increase in single parent homes across racial groups is a better predictor of criminality than some of the things that get a lot of attention. And when you talk about the relationship between poverty and crime, really what we see is that growing up in a high crime community is a stronger predictor of poverty than is poverty a predictor of criminally offending. And so,
can you say that one more time? I just want people to hear that. That's a powerful statement. Can you say it one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. So growing up in a high crime community is a better predictor of poverty in adulthood than is growing up in poverty a predictor of criminal offending. There are far more kids who grow up poor who will never seriously criminally offend than there are kids who grow up in high crime communities, and because they live in a high crime community, do not have the economic opportunities that other kids have.
Can you tell people how to find your study?
Absolutely. So the Georgia Center for Opportunity's website is foropportunity.org. There's a search bar right at the top, and if you type in that search bar, how to reduce crime in Atlanta, it'll take you right to the report. We're Georgia Center for Opportunity across all the social media platforms, and I'm jcrawford502 on Instagram if people want to connect directly.
Thank you, Josh. Have a great day. Keep up the great work, and God bless you.
Thank you.
Shelley went to show. We'll be right back.
Start your evening off right.
This is U.S. Senator John Ossoff.
Hey, Atlanta, this is Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones.
The new Shelley Winter Show here on WSB Radio, weeknights from 7 to 10 p.m.
Keep up good work, Shelley.
The Shelley Winter Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Interesting interview. I thought the most fascinating thing I've heard in a very long time, that kids who live in high crime neighborhoods is more a predictor of their later on in life, participating in criminal behavior than kids who live in high poverty areas. And it's something that Josh Crawford, our guest, said before he went off the air, was that there are millions more kids who come from poverty who don't become criminals. But many kids who come from high crime neighborhoods go on to become criminals. Isn't that interesting? It's fascinating. Maybe we're looking at this thing all wrong. So I want to, this past weekend, Donald Trump was asked, I'm going to find this sound. I apologize. I don't have it right now. But essentially, Donald Trump, I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. Donald Trump sat down with Megyn Kelly. And long form interview, they talked about a lot of different things, right? And Megyn Kelly asked Donald Trump, can a man become a woman? Very simple question. Can a man become a woman? And Donald Trump said, well, if you're talking about pregnancy, then no. And he goes on to talk about pregnancy. But she didn't ask him about pregnancy. She simply asked him a question, can a man become a woman? And the answer to the question, obviously, is no. A man can not become a woman. He can become a man who chooses to identify as a woman, but he cannot become a woman. And so that was a lot of things. And I saw that and I thought to myself, wow, what's the hesitation? And then, I thought, well, maybe there's a larger clip, but I couldn't find it. That was it. It was a hesitation and then went on to something else. And I'm thinking to myself, what are you doing now? Like, you usually don't care about what you say or your policy prescriptions. You don't really, you don't poll. You don't look and see what the people feel before you answer a question. I found it very odd. So when I saw that, I tweeted out. I said, this is the kind of thing that I need to get off this train. I got 1 foot off this train. So, I mentioned that. I said that. I said, I have 1 foot off the train. Then I find out today he sent out a tweet on Truth Social. And I want to read this tweet to you because it's troubling to me. It's very troubling to me. He basically says, just a done for the Jewish movement. But why phrase it that way? And here's where I get concerned. Have you not learned after 4 years of being in office, after an election that you doubt was stolen from you, after going through what you're going through now, have you not learned how to put your words out there? Not for the 40% that are not going anywhere, but for the independents and others who may come onto your side. Now you might say, "Well, Shelley, what's wrong with what he said?" It wasn't anti-Semitic. No, it wasn't anti-Semitic, in my opinion, but it can be seen as anti-Semitic by many others. And not just those who already see everything he says, does, or tweets or posts is wrong and will try and pick at it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just regular people. Just a quick reminder for liberal Jews who voted to destroy America and Israel because you believe false narratives. It's a whole lot of tropes in there. A whole lot of tropes. And you can say the same message as a grown man. This is my frustration. You can say the exact same message by simply saying Happy New Year from the most successful Israel-supporting president of our time, or whatever you want to say. You can simply tout what you've done without the punch. And this is my concern. If you're in the middle of a general election, you know you got 40% on your team. They're not going anywhere. But you need to get up to close to 60. You need heavy turnout, and you got to get close to 60. You can't be in the 50s because there's too much hatred for you. So you got to get closer to 60. And so if you're in a general election and you tweet this out next year on Rosh Hashanah, what do you think is going to happen? What goes through your mind that you don't recognize this can be seen as bad? Why don't I just tout my policies towards Israel and leave it at that and say Happy New Year? I anticipate your vote this time. Or I would love to have your vote. Why does everything have to be a punch? Why does everything have to be a smack in the face? That's what got you in trouble the first time. Now you might say, well, Shelley, that's who he is, and I stand with him because he's tough. Yeah, tough guys tout their accomplishments. Tough guys don't have to smack you every time. Really tough guys simply say, hey, look what I did for Israel. Look what I did to protect, to give them a recognition of the Golan Heights. Look what I've done with Iraq and Iran. Look how I've kept them at bay. Look how my funding and aid went up to Israel. Look how I treated Israel. I'd love to have your vote next time around. Even if you want to slap them lightly and say, hey, 2020 is behind us. No harm, no foul for those that didn't vote for me. You could do that. But why start off anything when you're trying to tout your good policies around a Jewish issue like Israel with just a quick reminder for liberal Jews who voted to destroy America and Israel? It's silly. At this point, you're not a rookie anymore. You're a sitting president for 4 years. You're not a rookie. It's silly. I got more, but then I got good news. It's a Shelley Winter Show.
Can a man become a woman?
In my opinion, you have a man, you have a woman. I think part of it is birth. Can the man give birth? No. Although they'll come up with some answer to that also someday. I heard just the other day, they have a way that now the man can give birth. No, I would say I'll continue my stance on that.
Simple question, simple answer. Simple question, simple answer. Can a man become a woman? No, no, ma'am. Can we keep it moving now? Can you ask me something about policy? Simple answer, simple, a simple question, simple answer. But then I want to go on. Jenna Ellis, who's one of the 19 charged here in Georgia, says that she will not vote for Donald Trump because he is, quote, a malignant narcissist who cannot admit mistakes. This is what she said. I simply can't afford him for elected office again. Why I have chosen to distance is because of that frankly malignant narcissistic tendency to simply say that he's never done anything wrong. Now, she's being charged with him. That could have something to do with it, separating herself from him before this trial. And so it'd be very interesting to see what happens. But why I bring these two stories up is because I want to stay on the Trump train. As I said to I was out at the football game, Falcons game, tailgating on yesterday. And good friend of mine, shout out to my large brother, Walter Jordan. He pulled me over to a car. Some young ladies were in a car. And he said, why? And he said to me, why do we need Trump in office again? And I answered the question. I ran down the economy. My life was better, simply put, when he was the president. Things were better. Things went smoothly. We weren't being challenged by Russia. We weren't being challenged by China. We weren't being challenged by Iran. We weren't being challenged by these people. These people were not stepping up and saying, I think they're a little weak right now. They're a little wounded right now. Let me get what I can. And so I want to support the guy. But these are not the Jenna Ellis, but the first thing about the tweet with liberal Jews destroying America, I just feel like, why would you say that? And that's what bothers me going into 2024. If I know that every statement made by me is going to be twisted and turned into something that I did not mean it to be, if nothing else, everything I said, I would be very clear in my statements. Extremely clear in my statements, especially if it's a tweet or a post on social, whatever you want to call it. If it's something I'm writing, I'm definitely going to be as clear as possible. You won't be. I'm going to make it such that you can't turn it around. And if you even try and turn it around, everyone seeing you turn it around, when they see what I originally wrote and what you said I wrote, they will be clear. And they will clearly say, wow, they are really going after this guy. Now, I know they are really going after this guy. That's not my point. My point is, don't make it easy for them to go after you. This is not 2016 anymore. You know what you're dealing with now. You absolutely, positively know what you're dealing with right now. But amidst all of that, here's another reason why it's hard for me to jump off. I got one foot. You know how you're on a train? You ever rode a train? That you can, when an old-fashioned train. So I'll tell you a little story really quickly. Years and years and years ago, in another lifetime, I flew to Jamaica. We took a trip. My friend Chip, my friend Kenny Bell, and my friend Jerome. We all went to Jamaica. And so we flew into Kingston because my brother Bobby, who still lives in Kingston, who I just went and visited about 3 weeks ago, he still lives there. Family, my dad there, my brother Bobby lives there. So we flew to Kingston, spent a couple days in Kingston, and then our bright idea, this is about 25, 30 years ago, our bright idea was to take a train to Montego Bay, where we eventually spent the rest of our 7 days in Montego Bay. And so all the while that we are planning to take this train, in our heads, we're thinking of an Amtrak. Even though we're in Jamaica, we're thinking the train is going to be like Amtrak, an air-conditioned train with a food car and all kinds of stuff. Well, when my brother dropped us off at the train station in Kingston for us to take the train from Kingston to Montego Bay, which some will tell you takes either anywhere from 4 to 8 hours, not 4 to 4.5, depending on weather, not 4 to 5, depending on a number of people, 4 to 8.5. He told us that as he dropped us off. But we get on a train, and this literally was a train that looked like it came from a set of an old-fashioned Western. The windows drop down. You walked between the cars. You could hang out in between the cars. You could just kind of hold on to the metal handle and hang out and lean out. It's like an old Western rail, a train. And so the point I'm bringing up about that is, at that, if you stood in the middle of the two cars and let the wind blow, and you wanted to see the scenery as you go through the country, the center of the island, of a beautiful island, Jamaica, West Indies, you could take 1 foot and hang off the train. 1 foot's on a train. You hold the handle and you kind of just hang off. Well, that train represents the Trump train, and I've got 1 foot hanging off. I'm not going to jump. The train is moving. But I got 1 foot hanging off. Now, in the case of Jamaica, they actually had army soldiers patrolling the train. And I asked one of them, I said, hey, sir, why is the army on a train and not just regular police? He said, because when we get deeper and deeper into the middle of the island, there are robbers. I said, wow, robbers, really? He said, yeah, they will rob the train if there's no army on the train. So, interestingly enough, so that's where I am with Trump. I'm on a Trump train. It is moving, and it's moving quite fast, but I just don't understand the mistakes that the conductor is making. It's just silly mistakes. Stay on point. Stay on task. Stop getting off the tracks, having us, the passengers, having to pick the train up and put it back on the tracks. But here's good news. For all of us who have 1 foot still on the Trump train, and for those of us who are on the train fully, and this is the good news. The good news is that according to polling, Donald Trump according to right now, if the race was held right now in Georgia, Donald Trump would get 41%. 41% versus 30 to Biden's 35%. This is a poll of 4,413 American adults in Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Nevada, and Michigan. But more specifically, here in Georgia, he's looking at a situation where he would get 47% compared to Biden's 38%. So there's good news on the horizon. I just don't need you to make it harder than it already is. It's the Shelley Winter Show. 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Give us a call. Tell us what you think. Coming up next, I've got to talk about Coach Primetime, Deion Sanders, coach of Colorado Buffaloes. We got to talk about the impact that this guy has made on college football in three weeks, literally, into a season. This is Shelley Winter Show. We will be right back. Coming up in 2 minutes on the Shelley Winter Show, I want to tell you a story. It's a story about one man, but it ties into what I just talked about, Trump and me having one leg still firmly planted on the Trump train as the train goes along towards 2024, coming up in 2 minutes on the Shelley Winter Show. It's the Shelley Winter Show, ladies and gentlemen. We're live, we're local, we're topical, we're relevant, we're fun, we're funny sometimes, we're entertaining, we're informative, all those things. We hope that you join us every Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. on this great station, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk. And please, 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 I beg of you to spread the word. So before I tell the story about a young man that I know, I need to take some calls, but then I also want to tell you that I'm trying to develop a new segment on gambling. I'll tell you that in just a second, but let's take a couple calls. Bruce in Brookhaven. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, Shelley, how you doing?
Wonderful, sir.
Good. How's it going with the non-smoking?
It's going.
You're struggling.
It's going. It's good. But I got to tell you, man, it's at the same time. I've become addicted. To be honest with you, I've become addicted to the gym. Yeah, I've been going to the gym a lot. I went to the gym today. Shout out to my personal trainer, Sharifa Robertson. She worked me today, and I said, oh, this is tough, you know what I mean, because I'm sore all over. And she said, she laughed. Like, this woman laughed at me. She's a small little short little young lady, very powerfully built, very, you know, she's a personal trainer, very good shape. You know, she said, well, she laughed at me and said, well, it's only going to get harder. Like, I'm really still, this is only our second time out. I'm still trying to figure out your strengths and weaknesses, so this is only going to get harder. And I said, wow. But it's going, Bruce. Thanks
all
for
right,
asking.
So, enjoyed the segment about 1 foot off the rail or the train. Besides Trump, what other foot would take you back up the step or the rail?
What do you mean? Oh, besides him?
Yes.
The weaknesses of the other candidates. Right to this point, I haven't seen anybody. What would really take, what would, wait, you said what would get me back on a train, both legs, right?
No, not with Trump. A new runner.
Oh, who would I jump off his train to another train? I they all have the same policies, right? It's got to be someone that breaks through. No one has broken through for me. Tim Scott is a nice guy. I like nice guys, but I'm not sure if the world is ready for the nice guy president. Quite honestly, we see a nice guy in there now, and the whole world's taking advantage of him. And I'm not saying that would happen to Tim Scott. I'm just saying the nice guy, he's a nice guy. He's genuinely a nice guy. And it's not a bad thing. But I'm not sure if the world is ready or needs a nice guy. Nikki Haley, I don't know. There's something about Nikki Haley that I truly like, but there's something very, I can't put my finger on it, but it's something, I don't know what it is, but it's something, I don't know, it's nothing to do with her being a woman. She's a brilliant woman. She's extremely qualified. She was a governor. She ran a state. She was at the UN, ambassador to the UN. So she knows foreign policy. She knows the players. I do like her, but there's something nagging at the back of my mind that I can't put my finger on. Ron DeSantis, I'm disappointed in Ron DeSantis because everyone told me and all the numbers said that we talked this guy into running for office and he's got to do it. And then he does it and he can't break through. Mistake after mistake. I like Vivek. That's the guy that stood out to me. And one of the reasons he stood out to me, Vivek has, is because of the attacks that come on him. The attacks are coming from entrenched elite people in the media and other politicians telling him he's wrong on everything he's saying. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you guys are saying to continue doing the same foreign policy policies that have been implemented for the last 30 years that don't seem to be working, and all you guys are doubling down on it. And I'm thinking maybe we should do something differently. So, but the point is, I don't know that anybody can pull me off fully off because no one's shown through. No one stood up.
Yeah, no, it is. I'm anxious for the next debate. I'm
very
really looking forward.
Very
to that.
September 28th, I believe. 10 days. Thanks for your call, Bruce. When we come back, I'm going to tell you the story of a young man that's all about Trump. And why this foot that's still on the train for me still remains there. This is Shelley Winter Show. We'll be right back. Got doubleheader on Monday Night Football tonight. Got the Browns and the Steelers, always a war. And Saints, Carolina, two division games on Monday Night Football. Just want to tell you that. Just so you know, Mr. Loser, that's my new gambling name, Mr. Loser. I parlayed -3 on the Saints and -2 on the Browns. We'll see how it goes. Wish me luck. I took a bath this weekend, the worst gambling weekend ever. I think I'm going to give up gambling. Nah, I won't. I need a vice. Don't smoke. Don't drink. Drink a little bit. I drank at the game yesterday, but not much. Not like I used to. Exercising more. Not eating pork. I don't eat bad stuff. I don't go to fast food anymore. I got to have a vice. Gambling is cool. And it sounds good. You know, you're sitting around with your boys. Who you got? Oh, I teased. You know, I've got to have a vice. Every man needs a vice.
You like Radiohead?
They have a vice? That's my vice, Radiohead?
1 second.
Fitter, happier, more productive, comfortable.
You heard this
not
one?
Not drinking too much.
This is what I'm thinking about right now.
Exercise at the gym 3 days a week. Getting on better with your associate employee contemporaries.
Young Blue on the Wheels of Steel. So, I wanted to start off with that, but I want to tell you a little story. I want to tell you how my weekend went gambling. It sucked. In a nutshell, it sucked. I went 0-for. Never done that in my life. I've at least won one game. I went 0-for. And I must have bet like, I get sick even talking about it. I may have to pay my guy tomorrow. Anyway, just thinking about it makes me mad. Anyway, I want to tell a real quick story. So I have a young cousin by the name of Naquan. Naquan is a good, smart young man, and I'm hugely proud of him. And I met him late in life, right? I met him late in life, and but he's my cousin, you know. And so 2018, Naquan would follow me on my social media, and he would just disagree with every single thing that I said, constantly, just disagree. Trump is this, Trump is that. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about, cuz. And he'd go in on me, like he'd really go in on me, right? And so now, a couple years later, after he's been following me on social media the whole time, he's calling me up and telling me things like, oh, I understand what you've been saying all these years. Oh, I need Trump back. Oh, you're right. Right. And I'm not gloating. I'm just saying this is what he's saying. I realize now what you were saying. I can't believe that I was so, and this is his words, not mine. I've been so propagandized that I believed the things these people were telling me. And now, you know, he says he drops things like, now that I'm doing my own research, so it's little things like that. But one of the things that I found very fascinating was Naquan was talking to me about what he's hearing from his peers, because he's younger than I am, has a very good job, makes very good money, and helps a lot of people in his job. But what he's telling me from his peers, and his peers are saying the same thing. Wow, we need Trump back. And these are not the people that are polled. So when they poll Georgia voters, they're not polling my little cousin Naquan and his friends, because they're not likely voters. They might have voted in the last election, but there might have been 3 or 4 or 5 elections in between that they never voted for. They're not regular voters, so they're not polled. But this is what he's hearing from particularly his male friends, is that they want Trump back. And I'm hearing it too. And that's why that leg that hangs off the train, because I'm tired of seeing former President Trump make the same mistakes and tweets and things like that that cost you the election the first time. Why do that? If you're going to tweet what you're going to do. This is what I'm going to do to make your life better. This is what I'm going to do to lower prices. This is what I'm going to do. 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 That's what people are going to respond to. The 40%, as you said a long time ago, most of us are not going anywhere. It's now time to talk to those other folks. We're there. So it's now time to talk to the other people. In other words, you need new friends. That's the way I see it. But my cousin Naquan, one person does not a poll make, but one person hearing the same thing from different people does make a trend. It's the Shelley Winter Show. We'll be right back. take some calls. It's the Shelley Winter Show. We're live, local, topical, and relevant. We want to take some calls, and then at 9:06, when we come back at 9:06, I want to talk about Coach Deion Primetime Sanders and what he's doing for college football. We'll talk about that coming up next. Let's go to Raymond. He's been holding. Hey, Raymond in Carrollton. Hey, Raymond, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, brother.
Hey, this is Raymond. We met at the Doves and Dinner.
Yes, sir.
With my son Kyle.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I remember you talked to me when I was sitting in the car.
Yes, sir. You were heading out.
Man. Yes, sir.
You should have stayed with us.
Kyle,
had a blast.
Kyle has that 1970s movie star haircut.
He's right here laughing.
What's going on, Raymond?
Hey, this is the first chance we've got to listen to you since we've seen you, so just wanted to call and, man, you should have stuck around with us. Man, the birds were flying. The Second Amendment was flying high.
My man, did your son have a good time?
Oh, yeah. I shot a good bit of doves.
Good for you.
We did real good and had a lot of fun. It was probably the best dove hunt I've ever been on.
Good for you. Good for you. Good for you. Father-son bonding time. I appreciate you calling in, both of you. Please continue to listen to the show.
All right, look forward to seeing you again.
Yes, sir. God bless. Raymond and his son are talking about the Dinner and Doves event that I went to, that I emceed down at NG Turf down in Whitesburg, Georgia, a couple weekends ago. Good father-son there. Let's go to Ed in Braselton. Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, Shelley, I must respectfully disagree with you regarding Trump. I consider myself an independent voter. I supported Trump in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I got to admit, I think that was the biggest mistake, considering what I saw those 4 years, 2016 to 2020. And I voted for Trump, I voted for Biden in 2020because of the things that I saw under the Trump administration, the corruption, the lies. It just got to be too much for me.
So how do you feel? So since you voted for Trump in 2016 and he was the worst president in 2017 to 2020, we're not going to quibble there. How do you feel about your vote for Biden in 2020? Understanding that it was because sounds like it was more against an anti-Trump vote than it was a pro-Biden vote. But how do you feel about that vote now?
I feel good. I think with ever since Biden took over, things have normalized. The economy has been doing pretty well considering the unemployment rate. We're below 4%, and Biden.
But it was there before. It was before Biden got there. That's where.
No, sir. You can Google it right now.
If I Google it right now, the only thing that changes it is the pandemic. We got to throw out the pandemic because they shut the economy down. Hold on, they shut the economy down. So you throw out the pandemic where they actually shut the economy down and put everybody out of work, the numbers are the same.
No, it wasn't below 4% under Trump, sir.
Okay.
I must disagree.
My
right
man.
Right now it's 3.5. Right now unemployment is 3.5, the lowest in 50 years, over 50 years.
All right, thanks, Ed.
Start your evening off right.
We were in New York City last month. We went up just to vacation, watched some shows and all that stuff. And we were walking down the street, and my wife and I listened to you. And we were walking by a little bodega. And as we were walking by, my wife says, "I think that's Shelley Winter on the radio. This is a guy from Georgia. What are you doing streaming this to here? We listen to him all the time." And they basically said that he was our voice. We love you. Keep doing what you're doing.
The Shelley Winter Show.
Welcome back. Before I get into Coach Prime, Ed in Braselton said that 3.5% unemployment is the lowest it's ever been in 50 years. I'm reading to you now, Council of Economic Advisors, October 4th, 2019. And I quote, "The household survey finds that the unemployment rate fell to 3.5% in September." I'm again reading to you October 4th, 2019, 4 years ago. 2019. Sorry. The household survey finds that the unemployment rate fell to 3.5% in September, marking the 19th consecutive month at or below 4% unemployment. The unemployment rate is the lowest it has been since May 1969, over 50 years ago. All Americans are benefiting from the labor market's continued improvement. The lowest unemployment rates on record were matched or set in September 2019 for African Americans, Hispanics, and people with disabilities. Additionally, the unemployment rate for people without a high school diploma fell to 4.8%, the lowest rate since the series began in 1992. And much lower than the 7.8% rate in November 2016. Boom. My man, thanks for listening, Ed. I appreciate you. Coach Prime. So, Deion Sanders. Let's talk about Deion Sanders. Everybody understands what's going on in Colorado. It is the... it could be one of the great all-time sports stories of all time. For those of you who are not college football fans or follow college football, I know many of you do because we have we're the home of the Georgia Bulldogs. So you do like college football. You love the dogs, but you like college football. But for those of you who don't know what's going on, Colorado head coach Deion Sanders is better known as Prime Time, played for the Falcons, played football, played baseball, played at Florida State University. Excuse me for clearing my throat. I apologize. It's extremely rude, and I apologize for that. he is now the coach of Colorado. He tried to get in a coach into coaching. He wanted to coach at a big-time college, and they told him basically he had no experience. So he went to Jackson State, an historically black college and university, did some good work over there, and then got the head coaching job at Colorado football. Colorado's football team went 1-11 last year. 1-11. Let me repeat that, 1-11 last year. So they hired coach Deion Sanders. Famously, the president of the university said, we didn't have the money. They're paying him like $29 million a year, something obscene like that, to coach football. And the coach and the president of the university told Deion and told the press, we don't have the money, but we'll find it. And they have found it. They're selling out games. Price of ticket is on par with top colleges like Alabama and places like that. It's like going to a Laker game. During the height of Magic Johnson and all that. It's like going to a Atlanta Hawks game in many ways. The announcer the other night, the game was Saturday night against Colorado State University. It was a tight game, went into double overtime. It was a great football game that went on to 2 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. And everybody I know was watching that game till the very end. A lot of people were watching that game. That's the Deion Sanders effect. That's where this money is coming from. People are buying tickets. People are paying attention. People are watching. But what people are not talking about is the impact that Deion Sanders is having in the lives of his players. And that's where I want to talk about. On Saturday during this game, his top receiver, Travis Hunter, who plays both sides of the ball. He plays receiver and he plays defensive back. Got hurt. He got on a cheap shot. Might have broken his ribs. So next up, you know, next man up, those of you who coach, those of you who played, those of you who have young sons or daughters, you say next man, next woman up, right? That's the term. Somebody goes down, who's up? Who's up next? Who's stepping in? Who's stepping up? And so Jimmy Horn Jr., who at that point had not been having a good game at all. Top receiver, very talented young man. He had dropped a pass. Deion stepped up to him on the field, came to him, held him by the shoulders, talked to him. No yelling, no shaking, no throwing, slamming down the playbook or the clipboard or the headsets. Just talk to him, man to man. Right there, just the two of them on the field. The most beautiful thing you'll ever want to see, ladies and gentlemen. It's one man to another man. And just talk to him. And then he did something that I'd never seen on a football field by a coach that on a player, not after the game, the player wins the game or when he's injured or something like that. During play, like not during play, actual play, but during the game, after talking to this young man, Deion Sanders hugged this young man. Now, it's one thing for a coach to hug a young man on the field after a great play in a celebratory way. But it's another thing for a coach, a man, to hug another man who's going through it, and they need him. because the star player went down and they needed this young man to step up. And he talked to him, and he put his arms around him, and he hugged him. And a young man hugged him back as strongly and as tightly as I've ever seen a young player hug a coach. I almost thought what I was watching was Deion Sanders' son hug his father, but I was watching a player hug a man, hug a coach, hug a father figure. And I said to myself, that, to me, is the Deion Sanders effect. I don't care about the glitz. I don't care about the money. I don't care that Dwayne Rock Johnson was on the sidelines and Weezy and all these celebrities were on the sidelines. I don't care about the sale of the sunglasses after the other coach, Norvell, said you're supposed to take your hat and sunglasses off when you're talking to people inside. I don't care about all of that. What I cared about was that moment where I saw a man hug another man to make him feel better and tell him that she's going to step up. Don't you worry about it. You're going to make the big play. And they hugged it out on that field. As two men, an older man to a younger man, a mentor to a mentee, a coach to a player. When I saw that, I said to myself, that's what people need to talk about. And when I say people, I mean me. When I saw that, I said to myself in the bed while I was watching at 2 o'clock in the morning, I said, you know what, Shelly, you've got to talk about that. Forget all the other stuff. You got to talk about that because that is what America needs. We need that. I don't care if it's a president of the United States. I don't care if it's a senator. I don't care if it's a teacher. I don't care if it's a program director. I don't care if it's a manager. I don't care what it is. We need that in this country right now. We need men, white, black, Jewish, Islamic, whatever. I don't care. We need men to grab other younger men under their arms, grab them by the neck, pull them in closely, and tell them we love them and they will be great. We need to do that on a daily basis consistently. I don't care. You see a kid walking down the street, just grab him and hug him and tell him you love him and tell him to stay out of trouble and tell him to keep going. Don't give up. Because when Deion hugged Jimmy Horn Jr., do you know who made the tying touchdown at the end of the game to send it to overtime? Guess who did it? Jimmy Horn Jr. It's the Deion effect, ladies and gentlemen. It needs to go national. Men loving on these young men. White, black, Chinese, I don't care what they are. We need to love on these young men because they are the future of our civilization and our country. It's the Shelly Winter Show. We'll be right back. Shelly Winter Show. Let me final thought on Deion. Do you know what makes the Deion Sanders effect really powerful, ladies and gentlemen? And you know, you guys know who I am. If you're just joining us, I'm going to give you a little insight. But for those of you who've been listening a long time, you know who I am on the spiritual end. You know what the most beautiful part about Deion Sanders and why we need people like him? I use him as an example to tell us what America is yearning for right now. The reason why Trump is up in all these polls is because people see him as a strong man, an alpha male. That's why he's up. That's the term I hear all the time. And a lot of people don't like that. But the other reason why we need a Deion Sanders now is he was on 60 Minutes just Sunday. And they talked about it. Deion Sanders said, he told those players, we're looking to cut you. The players that were at Colorado when he got there, their first team meeting. He said, you guys should enter the transfer portal. And if you don't, we're looking to cut you. And the reporter said to him, well, isn't that kind of strong? I mean, why would you say that? Some people would say that's kind of bad talking to those kids like that. And he was like, well, what do you mean? I'm not going to lie to these kids. They went 1-11. You went 1-11 last year. I'm getting ready to bring in some real top talent. I urge you to transfer. And one of the players, Michael Harrison, said, you're not going to run me out of my state. Guess how many touchdowns he scored Saturday night. But the real reason why we needed Deion Sanders is because Deion Sanders is open about his love for Jesus Christ. And they don't talk about that much. He does, but they don't. And you know who I mean by they. They'll talk about the people on the sidelines. They'll talk about, but there's a JC on his shoulders of his sweatshirt that he wears. JC, it says JC. They don't talk about that. They'll point out, oh, look at The Rock. Look at Weezy. Look at that. No one has said one time yet, hey, what's the JC stand for on your sweatshirt, Dion? Primetime? Coach Sanders? What's that JC stand for? They won't tell you that. That's why we need. That's why this is the great, this could be possibly, depending on how Colorado holds up throughout this Pac-14 season. Pac-12, Pac-14. Rob, what is it, Pac-14 or Pac-12? Someone will tell me. Whatever it is, but at the end of it, depending on how well they do, it's all right. It's all right. Whatever, depending on how well they do, right, it's going to be the greatest college football story of all time. And at this point, they're already doing better than they did last year, so it's already a great story. But imagine when the world finds out that this young man, that this man, Deion Sanders, thank you, that Deion Sanders recommitted himself to and made his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Wait till they start talking about that honestly and truthfully. Mm, mm, mm. 448-720-750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Zoe and Conyers. Hey, Zoe.
Hey, what's up, Shelly?
Hey, brother.
Hey, I called you enough. You need to come on and let me be a co-host on there.
Okay.
Hey, what I wanted to call and tell you, that the capture of that picture of Deion hugging the young man on the field, they had it on ESPN, the picture, online. And I have three boys. And I captured that picture and sent it to my three boys. And my title was The Power of Listening to Dad.
Mm. Mm.
And my thing from that is black men get a bad rep when it comes to being a father. And one thing that I do say, not only does he represent Jesus Christ, Deion takes pride in being a black dad.
And you know what? I'm going to say this, Zoe, because I know I get your point. I get your point. I'm not arguing with your point, nor am I debating your point, nor am I disagreeing with your point. You know what I'm saying? But yeah. I think in this world that we have today, that's the obvious, right? We see he's black. The player's black, right? We see that, right? I think what's more importantly to point out is he's representing dads everywhere, regardless of color. You know what I'm saying? He's representing fathers. Every father that has a son that's played sports, he's representing that guy. He's representing every guy that's taking his daughter to play soccer. He's representing that guy. He's representing fathers. That's why I say we need Deion Sanders right now, because we need fathers. But we don't need fathers from the standpoint. Hold on 1 second, so I'll let you talk. We don't need fathers from the standpoint of in our family lives. We need real father figures in this country. We need father figures as elected officials, not people that are staying squishy and they look at us and say one thing and do another, and they're all squishy and they go with the polls and they're one way or another way. We need fathers, fathers who will stare you in the face and say, son, you messed up. You better clean up your act. You know what I mean? Go ahead, Zoe.
Well, with all due respect, Shelly, as a black man, I just say that there's not a lot of positive role models for us out there, especially as dads.
Yes, sir.
And taking a real hit when it comes to that, and I take pride as a dad being a black man, and I just appreciate that they're finally putting that picture out there too, that there's some strong black dads that's doing the right thing as
absolutely
well.
Absolutely. No, and I didn't, and like I said, I wasn't disagreeing with you at all. I just was adding on to the story because it's a bigger story. You know what I mean? Coco Gauff's father was right there crying in the stands at the U.S. Open. You remember that? So we're seeing this. We're seeing this more and more and more. We're seeing it with all fathers. And that's my point. We need fathers are stepping up. They've been stepping up for eons, decades, and for a very long time.
Right.
You know what I mean? The fathers have. Not the men that have babies. The fathers have. And I think America right now needs a father figure. You know what I mean? If it comes in the form of... Thanks for your call.
All right.
Thank you, Zoe. So if it comes in the form of a Donald Trump, an alpha male, or if it comes in the form of somebody else, I don't know who it is, but we need a father figure right now. America needs someone to look up to say, I respect you, I'm going to listen to you, and I'm going to do what you say. Not as an authoritarian, not as a fascist dictator. I'm just talking about as a father figure. That's the importance of Deion Sanders to me. I think that's what he's showing. Zone hit the nail on the head, or more specifically. But, you know, I like to talk globally here. But Zoe hit the world and hit the nail on the head. Goes back to what Josh Crawford, our guest, if you missed it, it'll be online later on. Josh Crawford, executive from the Georgia Center for Opportunity, was talking about crime and where it's coming from. Single-parent households. Those young men playing for Colorado, those young men playing for Jackson State, those young men playing under coaches just like Deion Sanders, Coach Norvell on the other side, the coach just like Deion Sanders. Other coaches that are not doing it, just using these kids up and sending them on their way after they play. Those coaches that care at the Pee Wee League level, at the T-ball level, at the youth basketball level. Those coaches that care and are wrapping their arms around these boys with no fathers that are saving this world. We need more of them. That's the Deion Sanders effect. It's the Shelley Winter Show. We'll be right back. Coming up next, an update on the missing jet and how it ties into a book I'm reading right this minute. It's the Shelley Winter Show. That comes back and that comes up in 2 minutes. It's the Shelley Winter Show, ladies and gentlemen. We're live, we're local, we're topical, we're relevant. We're entertaining, we're fun, we're funny. We're everything you want in a talk radio show. We hope you'll listen and spread the word if you like the show. We're on every Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. on this great station, 95.5 WSB Atlanta's News and Talk. So, earlier today, a Marine Corps F-35 went missing. Went missing. So I shop at Walmart a lot. I like Walmart. I go to Walmart for food. I go to Walmart for little things. The other day I had to go there. I bought a small cooler. I have coolers, roller coolers, because I do a lot of festivals. I go out, you know, I do a lot of outdoor stuff. So I have like four coolers. And tradition has it that when I go someplace and I have my I take a cooler, I'll fill it up with beer, I'll fill it up with liquor and ice and all that stuff, and inevitably I have too much, and I come home and it's a whole bunch of stuff still in there, and I'm usually a little tipsy. It's late at night. I've been lugging a cooler, lugging a tent, lugging chairs, and I'm always too tired. And I usually just take the cooler out of the car, put it in the garage or in the shed, or sometimes leave it in the driveway because I have a huge driveway, and I leave it there, and then stuff sits in there until the next time I use the cooler. And sometimes it sits in there so long that I don't feel like cleaning the cooler, so what I'll do is I'll just buy a new cooler. So I have several coolers. And so one day, recently, I go to Walmart, and I wanted to buy an over-the-shoulder cooler because I didn't need my big roller cooler. I just needed something small. And so I bought a red over-the-shoulder cooler, one of those things you just put a couple beers in, maybe a bottle or two of wine and stuff like that, right? And so I'm in, my point of telling the story is I'm in Walmart a lot. And every time I go to Walmart, I go by the book section. And the reason why I go by the book section is because I'm always looking for new reading materials. And my favorite authors are Tom Clancy and James Patterson, both of whom, Tom Clancy, as you know, passed away, so they have other writers, but it's under the Tom Clancy name with Jack Ryan Jr. series. Jack Ryan is the son of Jack Ryan, the original, who's the president now, right? And all the characters are the same. And so recently, I was in Walmart, and I was walking by the book section, and I saw the new Tom Clancy. I said, wow, new Tom Clancy's out. And because there are several writers writing Tom Clancy character-led books, they come out all the time. It used to be you had to wait 6, 7, 8 months, maybe a year or two before the new Tom Clancy came out, but now they're coming out on a regular basis because there's several people writing them, and they're all very good. the Tom Clancy, you know, the family, or you know, whoever's running the estate, they've picked some great writers, and they write in the same kind of form. No one can write like Tom Clancy, but they write similar to him, and they're great stories, and they're the same characters. So because there's several of the writers, there's several writers, new ones come out all the time. So I'm in Walmart, and I'm walking around. I'm walking through the book section, as I always do, on my way to go get what it is that I'm there to get, whether it's a new cooler or food or some drinks or whatever the case may be, sometimes some school supplies, whatever. I'm in Walmart a lot. And I'm walking by, and I see the new Tom Clancy, and it says Red Winter is the new book that's out by Tom Clancy. It's called Red Winter, not Shelley Winter, Winter the Season, W-I-N-T-E-R. And I go to pick it up. I say, wow, I don't think I have this one. But then I notice it says a Jack Ryan novel. See, all the ones that have come out recently about the campus, and I'm going into a lot. I don't want to explain a whole bunch because I don't have much time. But they say that a Jack Ryan Jr. novel. Well, this one said a Jack Ryan novel. So I grabbed it. And I'm reading it. And it's really a origin story of Jack Ryan. Before he becomes president, before all this stuff happens, before everything in his career happens, before Rainbow Six, before Sum of All Fears, all of that, before all of that, in the 80s, Russia, East Germany, and all of that, the Berlin Wall, all of that. He's an analyst. This is kind of like I said, an origin story. So I'm reading it, and the whole premise of the book is that a stealth bomber or a stealth fighter, goes down in the Utah mountains. And the East German spy who's in America is searching for the remains of that downed fighter jet because they want to get the technology for Russia and East Germans and the communist nations to find out how to build their own stealth bomber. So he picks up a piece and he's trying to get back. And the whole book is that. That's the theme of the book. And so I see the story coming out. A Marine Corps F-35 is lost. The pilot ejects. We don't know why he ejected. They just say a mishap. Then they finally found a debris field 2 hours around the North Charleston Air Base, and they find a debris field. And the first thing I thought when I hear this story is, wow, I'm reading a book about that right this minute called Red Winter by Tom Clancy. A Jack Ryan story. It's a Shelley Winter Show. You can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. You simply cannot make this stuff up. And they want to have us believe they don't know what the mishap was. They are having us to believe that it's a debris field that they found, and because of the stealthiness of the bomber, they couldn't really track it. All of this they want us to believe. The debris field? So the plane just crashed? Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, this is where we are. It's the Shelley Winter Show. We'll be right back. Shelley Winter Show, live, local, topical, relevant. Let's go to the phones. John was at Friday night's live lounge. How are you, John? Thanks for calling, my friend.
Oh, right quick. I'm doing wonderful. Me and my wife are there. We had a wonderful time. We really do appreciate it. I don't know if you've given a shout-out to the caterers, but if you haven't, you need to. The food was wonderful. The whole thing was wonderful.
Yes, sir. Del Mar's Catering, Del Mar's Restaurant out in Conyers there. I'll get the address. They did the catering, and the food was, you're right, John, the food was awesome, was delicious.
Yeah, and the second thing, right quick, that guy called Brouser a while ago talking about how good the economy is now. I don't know what planet he's on or what he's smoking, but, you know, paying $1.80 more a gallon for gas now than I did under Trump. Plus, when me and my wife go get groceries, it's about $50 more for the same amount of groceries. So if he's all right with that, I guess he's okay then.
Yeah, he's doing well. I really said I didn't even want to get into all of that because it was such an obviously slanted and silly statement to make that the economy is doing better now. I just couldn't understand that, how you could make that statement.
Yeah, me either.
All right, thanks.
I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you, John, for coming out Friday night. Hey, for John, real quick, I know you said it was a great event. The food was great and everything. How are the magician and Elvis? How did Southside Elvis?
Oh, I'll tell you what, I love that. The magician was unreal. I mean, that's the first time I've been that close to a magician, but he stunned me by stuff he done.
Yep, great call, John. I appreciate you coming out, brother. The catering for Friday's Live Lounge was done by Dell's Kitchen. Give them a shout-out. Dell's Kitchen is located in Lithonia, Georgia, 7173 Covington Highway. Nice restaurant out there in Lithonia, Georgia. If you're ever on that side of town or you live on that side of town, 7173 Covington Highway, Dell's Kitchen. I'm telling you, they had three different types of chicken. Not just small pieces. They had real chicken, whole chicken legs and thighs. They had barbecue. They had lemon pepper and teriyaki. Man, it was good. Baked beans, potato salad. Potato salad had huge chunks of potatoes in it. Huge chunks. Like real potato salad. Like real chopped up potatoes that mixed in. You know what I mean? Rice was delicious, nice and moist rice. Oh, it was good food. Good food. Shout out to Dell's Kitchen for providing the food for us. I want to talk about this. Where did I want to go, Blue? You're supposed to help me out with this kind of stuff. Oh, man. All right. Well, we talked about that. Oh, boy. We talked about that. I'm down to nothing. I'm down to literally nothing. I have nothing to talk about. No, I'm just kidding, ladies and gentlemen. I have a lot to talk about. Did you hear this one? We've got to end the show with this. I just talked about the need for a father figure in this country. And I talked about Deion Sanders. One of the things that fathers do, I tell you a quick story. I grew up going to church every Sunday, right? Like a lot of people listening to me now. I grew up in the church, going to church. And, you know, it was one of those families, mom, you know, grandma, mom, okay, it's time to go to church. We got up and we went to church. Time to go to church. So basically, up until I went to college, I had to go to church every Sunday because I was, you know, mom, grandma, whoever it was, woke me up to go to church. Hold the music for a second. Hold the music. And so when I first got to college, I didn't have anybody to tell me I had to get up. So I stopped going because I was on my own time, right? I was in college. So one time I came home from college and I decided to go to church. My grandfather was the usher. My grandfather, Walter G. Lockhart, he was the usher. And so I went down to go to church. I had on a sweater vest, an unbuttoned collared shirt and buttoned down collared shirt, some jeans and penny loafers. And I walked into church, big kind college student, everybody proud. Shelly went off to college. I walk into church and my grandfather, who's the usher, looks at me and says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going into church, Papa. Aren't you surprised to see me? I came to church while I was home from college." And he said, "You're not dressed like that." And I said, "Oh, Papa," and I started laughing. "Oh, Papa, come on now." And I start to walk. He grabs me by the waistband and pushes me out and tells me, "Go home and change. You're not dressed appropriately for church." And my job as an usher is to let you know that. I tell that story to tell you that now the Senate has allowed people not to come in with suits and ties on for men. They've allowed people to come into the Senate dressed as you are. Churches started doing the same thing. Come to church dressed as you are. Why do you think they did that? Because they wanted more people to come to church. No, they also did that. When they did that, they also ruined the experience because the whole point of church is to be respectful of God. The whole point of the Senate is to be respectful of the American people. This is Shelly Went to Show. Feel Good Stories coming up next. We end every show with a feel good story. Here's my feel good story. This is a great station to work at. I love working here, I love the people here. They're all fine, wonderful, committed to radio people. And on Friday, we got an email saying, we had access to go to Music Midtown. And so I went Sunday. I saw a little baby and I saw Guns N' Roses. And it was it was just like the reporters have been saying, it wasn't Music Midtown, it was Music Mudtown. That was clever. Sweet Ann came up with that, and she's absolutely right. But I want to tell you something. I went out to see Little Baby. Little Baby's a rapper, and here's what I learned. This is my feel-good story for the night. I want you all to hear me very closely. I'm a hip-hop fanatic. I grew up on hip-hop, and I love hip-hop. And I'm very critical of these young guys and young ladies in hip hop now. I think it's garbage music. That's what I thought. But I went to hear Little Baby. And in listening to him, I was listening to his lyrics. And I said, you know what? Here's the problem with these young guys and us old heads who grew up on hip hop. When I first copped Biggie's first album, Ready to Die, I had to listen to that album at least 7 times to hear all the words and understand what he was saying. No artist, no form of music, maybe with the exception of country music, do you understand every song, the lyrics of every song when you first hear it. The problem with us old heads in hip hop is that we're not giving these young men a chance to listen to what they're saying. We're hearing a song, we don't understand it, and we keep, oh, I can't believe I can't, this is mumble rap. I've done it. I know what I'm talking about. Well, what these kids are saying is real some powerful things, but we're not giving them a chance. We're not listening to the lyrics. We listened to the lyrics over and over and over time, over and over and again to get the words. Let's give this cut of slack to these young people, these young men. The ladies, not so much, because they're selling the harlot imagery. We don't like that. But the men, let's cut them some slack. It's Shelly Winter Show. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 p.m.
Send this one home.